What's up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
What's up? I'm Pete.
And we are talking about comics. What?
What? It just sounds like you're barely making it, man. You're like, what's up, everybody? Fucking Stack. Oh, God.
Week 52 of our comic book reviews.
We actually have a ton of titles queued up for you today. Kicking it off with a big one from DC Comics. Rorschach number one, written by Tom King and art by Jorge Fornes. This is a highly anticipated slash highly dreaded, I think, a comic book. Highly dreaded. It's following up on Watchmen, which is always a dicey proposition.
Okay, I see what you're saying
book,
there. Okay.
We get introduced to a very Manchurian candidate type scenario as a Rorschach, I don't want to say the Rorschach, but a Rorschach and somebody else try to assassinate a presidential candidate. Maybe there's an investigator who's looking into it. And by the end, spoiler, 3, 2, 1, but it seems like this assassin may be none other than Walter Kovacs, a.k.a. Rorschach himself. That out of the way, what'd you think about this book, Pete? What was your takeaway? What were your thoughts?
Well, I think it did a great job of grabbing the reader. Like, it starts off with Rorschach kind of getting murdered, which is interesting jumping on point. And then you kind of, it's a classic kind of Tom King storytelling where you're getting little pieces of information as you go along, but he does it so well. And it's weird to say I'm a fan of Rorschach, but there are aspects of Rorschach that I like. I love the where's your gun moment. I thought that was really awesome. I mean, it's great art, interesting story. I think it's just kind of like the election balloons and the stuff with everything that's happening right now. I think it's a very well-timed book, and I'm on board, but, you know, I was going to be on board when you had a Rorschach number one. So I'm not upset about it. I'm very much enjoying it, and I'm looking forward to more.
Jorge Fornes' art, and I believe it's Dave Stewart's colors, are great throughout the book. Just very, very good across the board. Clearly delineate what's happening in the past versus what happens in the present. There are a couple of things that I think are kind of fascinating about this book. The biggest one is that Tom King has so clearly been influenced by Watchmen and Alan Moore down to his panel grids, the way that he lays them out. But he purposefully avoids the 9-panel grid here in this book to the point where there's one page that I think is like a 12-panel grid or maybe a 15-panel grid or something like that. But he never goes into that basic Watchmen breakdown of the page at any point, which almost seems like a no-brainer for somebody who has built a lot of their career on building his work off of what Alan Moore did. So that's curious to me. The other thing that's curious to me is the choice of setting, because it very purposely feels like the Manchurian candidate meets all the president's men down to the feathered hair that everybody has and the fashion they're wearing. It seems like it's set in the 70s, but Watchmen itself was set in the 1980s. So when is this set is my question. This is supposed to be now, but have fashions come around to the 70s again? What's going on? Are they only doing it because it's supposed to feel like a 70s conspiracy thriller? There's something about that and the lack of clarity there in the world, though I'm sure King, because he's a meticulous writer, has thought through it, and we'll find out eventually. I'm just not quite sure with this first issue. There's a wall there for me in terms of where it's set.
Okay. Well, it's a weird thing to get hung up on, but I understand what you're saying, but it's just weird to me because Tom King is kind of famous for you're going to have to keep reading to figure out, you know, the story.
Sure, but I think that's important because we're dealing with Watchmen and we're dealing with an ongoing world and we know this is continuing. There are things that are teased here and thrown into the background, whether it's through billboards or advertisements or other things that let us know, okay, this is kind of where the world got to from 1985 to here. And interestingly, some of the things, whether it's coincidence or not, dovetail with Watchmen, the TV series. So that only raises further questions in my mind of, is this in continuity with the comic book? Is it in continuity with the TV show? Is it in continuity with this both? Is it his own continuity? And I know that's not the only thing I should be thinking about. I know I should be concentrating on the story, which, taken on its own, totally divorced from Watchmen, is a good conspiracy thriller story.
Yeah.
But those are the sort of things that I do think are important to understand in some sense when you're saying, here, this is a continuation of Watchmen.
Yeah, just you kind of sound like me when we were talking about Tom King's Vision. Mm-hmm. You know, I was hung up on one little thing and you guys are like, hey, get
no,
over it.
No, I think this is a big thing, though. I think this is a big, important thing.
Yeah, it I will is be explained. An important thing. Sure, but it will be explained. All Tom right. King I, is I'm piecemealing.
Willing, I'm willing. It's a gorgeous comic book, like the best of before Watchmen, which was a dicey project to begin with, but still had some good comics come out of it.
Yeah, it did.
This is a dicey project that still seems like a good comic, so I'm happy to follow it along. But I have questions.
My question is, do you know if this is monthly or weekly? Because the election's coming up, and I need to know. You know what I mean?
I assume it's monthly.
Oh, man, we're in trouble.
All right, let's move on then to the second comic we're going to talk about, Commanders in Crisis, number one from Image Comics, written by Steve Orlando, art by David Tinto. We talked to Steve about this on the live show a couple of weeks back, and it is basically him doing a Crisis comic book, but with totally original characters. What do you think? Did it pay off on the premise that he sold us on the pitch, Pete?
I think it did. I think I'm in. This is very interesting. This is a cool team. It's fun to kind of see his take on a big crossover event like this. It's fantastic art. It's really, I like the team that is kind of in this thing. And there's like a cool kind of like moment, superhero moment where, you know, you had the kiss that was great. I'm on board. I think these characters are interesting enough that, like, even if I don't, it's not like a Avengers crossover event where I know every single person. I got enough here to go by, and I'm excited to see where this goes. It seems like he did a good job of selling it, and I'm in.
What's really fascinating about this to me is that it avoids any of the archetypes I expected going in that we would get a Superman, a Wonder Woman, a Batman, etc. We don't get any of that. These are completely, as far as I can tell, original characters. There's no analogs from any particular universe. And that only makes Steve Orlando's job harder going into this, but it does make it more interesting to read because their powers are so weird and so interesting. And the hook of it, which he talked about on the show, this is the reveal at the end of the issue. So if you don't want to know, turn away. But I still think it's fair to talk about because he mentioned it to us, is the death of empathy, which is going to be an interesting thing to see going forward. The other detail that is so weird, but such an interesting specific thing, is all the members of the team in the book are from different parallel universes where they were all presidents.
President, yeah.
Which is very weird.
Commander in Crisis, yeah.
Commanders in Crisis, they are commanders. Yeah. They were all like the first Latinx president, the first woman mm-hmm. president, the first etc. president. But it's a bunch of presidents with superpowers fighting a crisis, which is such a bizarre detail, but it makes so much sense for the title. I'm definitely on board. I think like he set up a weird, interesting, very different world here.
Yeah. And it's even like when you get the kind of splash page introduction of the superheroes, it's like prize fighter, as strong as the crowd hopes he is. I was like, what? And then it's like Sawbones, action surgeon. I've never seen those two words next to each other. Action surgeon, what is that?
Yeah,
you know, so it's
very intriguing.
Interesting. Yeah, it really does a good job of like kind of sucking you in. And then there's the fun kind of like, oh, these minions aren't very smart, they have their brains in a backpack, you know, like, okay, this is crazy, but It's doing a great job, and I think this really ought to be interesting to see how this unfolds.
I agree. Let's move on and talk about The Immortal Hulk, number 38 from Marvel, written by Al Ewing, art by Joe Bennett. In this issue, the leader is dominating the Hulk and all of his allies. He is in the Hulk's mindscape and controlling things from the outside. When a rogue element comes in and turns around the balance of power, Pete, I know you've been down on this book, but this issue, by the end, like in the right way, personally, I was like, what the fuck is happening here? Oh, yeah, this my is God.
Great. This is really great. You know, you got a lot of the kind of horror aspects that's been happening, but this like really gets into kind of the story and action. I'm very happy with this issue. It's really impressive. Very cool. It's got a lot of twists and reveals, but man, it's glorious. It really is a great issue of comic book.
Yeah, it's still horrifying, everything that's going on and the visuals that Joe Bennett draws, but everything that Al Ewing has been building up over the past 38 issues is really finally coming to crest here. It feels like the leader is probably the sub-villain that we need to deal with in this run, but it's still such a good leader story, and it's such a good Hulk family story that it feels dangerous in the right way. Just great. Gross.
It's really impressive how this book has grown and changed and done so many different things. It's really, you know, I can't imagine the pitch meeting for this fucking thing.
Okay, so get this. Rick
it's
is
a
very
horror
long.
Hulk.
Yeah. Yeah, Rick is long, and he kind of bends in a weird way.
Yeah.
And that's
it's the
pitch.
Grossest neck you've ever seen.
It's horrible. It's absolutely horrible. Yeah, great book. Moving on to The True Lives of the Fabulous Killjoys, National Anthem number 1 from Dark Horse Comics, story by Gerard Way and Sean Simon, art by Leonardo Romero. If you've never read this book, this is basically about a bunch of folks. It's sort of like an extrapolation of, what was the movie? Them, the Kurt Russell movie where he puts on this, Roddy Piper puts on the sunglasses and can see the truth about the world. It's essentially that, but in comic book form. And here, they've beaten the bad guys. They have won, as far as they know. And then things start to go horribly wrong from there. Really good book. I like this. It's esoteric and strange, as most of Gerard Way's stuff is. If you read his Doom Patrol, if you read Umbrella Academy. But it still feels very prescient and timely in terms of the storytelling, which I like quite a bit.
Yeah, it's really impressive. The art and the storytelling is gorgeous and fantastic and really moves. The story it moves through this kind of crazy world, and you're kind of really piecing it together, but it's very unique. And just when you think you got a handle on it, it just kind of surprises you again. And I love all the different groups that they kind of break down in the middle of it. I think this is a great issue that really kind of gets you excited for more in this world. It really sets things up and gets you wanting more. I think it's a great first issue.
And I think you could understand it even if you haven't read the first series. You could jump right in here and go ahead with it. Obviously, you're going to have a richer experience, but it's good stuff regardless. Next up, this is what we talked about on the live show a little bit. Dark Knight's Death Metal number 4 from DC Comics. Written by Scott Snyder, art by Greg Capullo. Wild stuff happening in this issue. This is bringing together a bunch of the one-shots and miniseries that have been running along. We find out what's been going on with the Flash team. We find out what's been going on with Wonder Woman, Batman, and Superman as they sink deeper into the crisis dark multiverses. Pete.
It still starts with Uncle Rock in this one, but, you know.
Sergeant Rock, yeah.
Sergeant Rock.
I call him Uncle Rock.
That's what he calls himself in this, which is a funny moment.
He married your aunt, so.
Yeah, that's how that technically works. You're right. But yeah, I mean, this is just amazing art, over the top fun. The dark side in that chair is unbelievable. It's like a Green Lantern's ring chair. So that means the Green Lantern has to sit there and keep thinking about the size and weight of that chair. That's a very intense little thing that doesn't get much attention. It's just they're killing this. This is just so much fun. Each one of these books is really fun to see what mashups of characters they're going to use and how crazy it's going to look. And it hasn't disappointed yet.
This entire book feels like the dialogue break in a metal song. When somebody's like, "And then Superman sunk into a pit of fire as Darkseid watched."
Yeah.
The whole thing. It's absolutely really ludicrous. The whole thing is crazy. We talked about it on the show, but it ends with the Darkest Knight, a.k.a. Batman Who Laughs, winning, turning the universe into the last 52, a bunch of dark multiverses. And it's only going to go from there. It's just, who knows how they're going to win, but it's funny for the insanely high stakes that it's just, honestly, just fun the entire time.
It really is.
You know? Let's move on to something that's a little bit grimmer, but in the right way. Stealth number 6 from Image Comics, written by Mike Costa and art by Nate Bellegarde. We've been loving this series on the show.
Yeah, it's too bad Justin didn't want to talk about this book.
He got out of here. He was like, "No thanks, don't want to talk about Stealth."
Yeah, he was like, "Listen, guys, I love Stealth. I said it was my pick, but I'd rather watch a football game right now, so fuck all y'all."
I don't think that's what's happening. But the end of Stealth, we got the, if you haven't been reading the book, it's about a guy who's in sort of a all-powerful armor, Darkhawk type thing, who also may or may not have dementia. He's been fighting against a guy called the Dead Hand, who can kill people by touching them with his hand. Everything is revealed in this issue. They loop everything back. We finish it up. This is the end of the miniseries. What'd you think about the conclusion, Pete?
I was really impressed with this. Like, this kind of started and it was like, wait, what's happening? I love the story. I love the action. The art's unbelievable. But I was kind of like, but man, does this all come together in such an amazing way? It's one of those books where you read it and at the end you're like, I want to go back and read it all over again. It's really great, really impressive, and you know, I can't compliment the art enough.
In a surprising way, too, it's nothing that I think you could have predicted from the first 5 issues, but it makes total sense at the same time when it's explained, which is a difficult feat to go through, pass.
Yeah,
off,
especially us. Like, we've read so many comics, you know, it's hard to surprise us, and this really did a great job of that.
This is a great miniseries. Definitely pick it up when it's in trade or individual issues. Next up, The Vein, number 1 from Oni Press, written by Elliot Rahal, illustrated by Emily Pearson. This is about a bunch of vampires around the turn of World War II who are robbing blood banks. Get it?
You see what they're doing there?
And when war breaks out with the Nazis and then everything changes, I was very surprised and impressed by this book. I thought this was a really fun concept. The characters were good. I liked how the world was laid out. And there's a good, nice twist at the end. How'd you feel, Pete?
Yeah, I really liked it. I thought it was very cool, kind of like bank heist, but they're robbing a blood bank. And also like fun, kind of like the way the vampires kind of handle the crowd and fuck with them a little bit. Very enjoyable. And what's also nice is even the undead are like, you know what's really fucked up? Nazis, man. Racism is awful. I'm a fucking undead vampire, but I know this is wrong. So let's go end this. That was great.
It's a little shaggy in terms of that because it feels like, okay, the concept is bank robbing vampires. I get it.
Right.
And then next issue, it's going to be like, okay, it's vampires fighting Nazis. I get it. So I'm wondering if it's going to change every single issue and that's going to be the rhythm of the book, or if it is something else. Whatever it is, I'm definitely on board. I had a fun time reading this. I think it's a fun take on vampires. And like I said, the character's good. So definitely willing to follow it. And Emily Pearson's character designs are very good as well.
Yeah.
Next up, The Avengers, number 37 from Marvel, written by Jason Aaron, art by Javier Garon. This is kicking off the end of the Age of Khonshu.
Yes, the Age of Khonshu, and this is the finale.
Yeah. This is the finale. So Khonshu, who is the god of Moon Knight, has taken the powers of the rest of the Avengers. This issue, they're fighting back, as well as Moon Knight, who now has the Phoenix power, is fighting back. This is playing with toys in the best sense of the phrase.
Yeah, and that's a great way to put it, because you do have like a super baby here who is like, yo, give me back my toys. So that was well put there. But yeah, this is fantastic art, and it's kind of reminds me of Snyder's just over-the-top fun, where like a lot of different characters are getting to play with different powers and stuff like that. And yeah, it's I think this is a great kind of like finale, and it's cool to kind of see somebody get powered up like this, and then kind of like, you know, spoiler, but you know, depowered and where those powers go. So it's again a writer and artist having a lot of fun with the different kind of powers and different perspectives. So yeah, I really enjoyed this. I thought it was, you know, it wasn't a huge kind of like event. It was just kind of big enough, and I thought it was great.
Yeah, it's playground rules, right? Like, yeah. It feels like every page, and I say this in the best sense because it's fun to read, but it's the sort of thing where somebody's like, oh yeah, you're going to attack my pyramid? Well, my wolfmen and my mummies are going to attack you. And they're like, fine. Yeah. Well, now I have the Iron Fist. Kabow, kabow.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That's great. Like, there's not enough of that in comics where it just feels like people playing and having fun. It all has to mean something, and it all has to lead to the next thing. This is the sort of thing where it's like, and I'm probably misremembering this, where She-Hulk could very briefly get the Iron Fist, and it has no bearing on anything whatsoever other than a fun splash page that they draw. And that's fine. You know, it's refreshing to read something like that. Here's another thing that is almost the opposite, where it's fun, but everything means something. Once in Future, number 12 from Boom Studios, written by Karen Gillan, art by Dan Mora. Pete, I know you love this series. This is wrapping up the Beowulf arc with some, I think, textually pretty big revelations for the mythology of the book, as teased to us by Karen Gillan when we chatted with him a couple of weeks back. How'd you feel about this one?
This is just continues to be one of my favorite things on the stands. Art is unbelievable. You have these unbelievable monsters, these great kind of stories and fables intertwined here. And then you just got one badass grandma who's not going to take shit from nobody. And this is just such a glorious comic book that is worth your time and money. And it's entertaining, it's smart, it's touching, it's, you know, stories that you've kind of known that kind of are told in this new kind of messed up way, and it's very, very enjoyable.
Yeah, Dan Mora's art and character designs and monster designs in particular are so good across the board, but this issue is Kieran Gillan doing his Kieran Gillan thing and wrapping stories together, figuring out how they fit together, figuring out how the mythology of England as an entity fits together. And it's fascinating to read, but it's nowhere near as dense as, say, Die, for example.
Yeah.
But just good, good stuff, and so much fun to read. Let's move on to an anthology, DC The Doomed to the Damned, number one from DC Comics, written by John Arcudi, Saladin Ahmed, Kenny Porter, Amanda Dibert, Mark Wolfman, Amadio Turturro, Alyssa Wong, Brandon Thomas, Travis Moore, and Garth Ennis. Art by Mike Perkins, Leonardo Manco, Riley Rosmo, Daniel Semperi, Tom Mandrake, Max Fumera, Dominic Domo, Stanton, Baltimore Rivas, Travis Moore, and PJ Holden. As you can probably guess from how I introduced it, as well as the lineup, this is a series of short stories teaming up DC Comics characters in spooky situations. As usual, how'd you feel about this one, Pete? And were there any stories that jumped out to you?
Yeah, this was a really nice collection. I had a lot of fun with this. I mean, the Batman versus the kind of monster in the mirror. This is great. This is what I want Halloween comics to be like, right? I want to see heroes taking on the kind of monsters. And this is the classic, like, you know, if you say a name in the mirror three times, you know. So it was cool to see that. The Raven Wonder Woman story was great. I'm a sucker for a Grundy story. I love the look of Superman in that one story. I thought, like, he really looked fantastic with the Swamp Thing. It was just super fun. I think there was a lot of cool stuff, and even the Green Lantern team-up I enjoyed.
Yeah, I like this as well. I mean, if you can't tell from the title, this is a riff on Brave and the Bold, but Doomed to the Damned instead. So it's a team-up book.
Oh, yeah, I just put it together.
Which it gives it a very different flavor from other anthologies. I think it gives it more focus, particularly because you usually get a non-supernatural character teaming up with a supernatural character. The best one for me, which you mentioned, is Saladin Ahmed's story, which I love Batman dealing with the supernatural because he does it all the time, but he never believes it. He's always like, scientific explanation for this. I got to figure this one out. And it's great here. He deals with essentially like a Candyman Beetlejuice type figure, except in Gotham City. And it's a lot of fun. But this is a good collection if you want to pick it up. Next up, Redneck, number 28 from Image Comics, written by Donny Cates, art by Lisandro Estherin. This is a title we have not checked out that much, I think. Right, Pete?
Well, so this is weird because I saw Redneck and I thought it was Jason Aaron's book called Redneck, and it's not. This is a different kind of redneck, not what you think, because it's about vampires. No,
Jason Aaron wrote another book. I don't remember what it's called, but it's not Redneck.
Oh, okay.
He's what is it? Southern Bastards. That's what he wrote.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yes. I thought, but anyways, so this is very kind of, the art is really fantastic. I love the way they kind of draw the action. And a very interesting kind of like tale throughout time here that we're dealing with. And I love the way it kind of ended kind of on this cliffhanger for more. I think this is a very interesting book, very kind of unique and creative. And I didn't know what I was getting into, and I was pleasantly surprised.
So Donnie talks about this in the end matter a little bit, but it is wild reading the first couple of issues of this book, which I think I read the first couple and I just got away from it for no particular reason. But it was what the title said. It was about a bunch of swamp folks dealing with vampires. I was like, oh, okay, I get it. Rednecks. Cool. I'm on it. I get the concept of this book. To hear where we're like, Dracula War, which is a very different sort of thing. But Lisandro's art in particular is epic throughout the book. It, as you mentioned, it spans through different time periods. I enjoy this quite a bit. And it's certainly the sort of thing that makes me want to be like, okay, I read the first collection. I read this issue. Now I actually need to read what happened in between, because clearly I missed a lot. Next up, Amazing Spider-Man number 50 from Marvel, written by Nick Spencer, art by Patrick Gleason. This is pick it up right on the last issue, but kick it off a new storyline where we finally learn the identity of Kindred, as well as why he has it out for Spider-Man, why he has it out for Norman Osborn, what happens to the Sin Eater. Big things happened in this issue. Spider-Man is in very dire straits. We're definitely going to get into spoilers here. So, Pete, how'd you feel about this reveal? What'd you think about this?
Cool. I mean, when I saw the Tombstone reveal, I was like, all right.
Well, but so let's walk through this, and this is spoiler time, but Kindred pulls up the Tombstone. You're supposed to think as a reader, oh, okay, is he Captain Stacy, Gwen Stacy's dad? But he's not. Instead, what Kindred has done is he's pulled up the corpses of Captain Stacy and Gwen Stacy and put them at a dinner table for Spider-Man. Classic villain behavior. But it turns out that Kindred is none other than Harry Osborn.
Yeah, at the end, there's another twist where you think, okay, we don't know. Here's the reveal of the Tombstone. That's who he is. But then at the end, it's like, he's my son. And then you're like,
I don't love that. I feel like we're going to have to do a lot of explanation to get to why Harry Osborn is this.
Especially when Spider-Man sits down for that dinner and he sees the two dead people. And then he's like, wait, but what's this got to do with Harry Osborn? You know what I mean?
I mean, first of all, indoor dining, very dangerous right now. Second of all, if you ever get in that situation, just be like, check, please.
Yeah. Also, you got to put masks on those corpses. You know what I mean? You can't just.
I mean, come on. Yeah, absolutely. They're can inside. Spread disease.
Yeah.
Yes. Think of the servers, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
This is a good issue. Nick Spencer is doing an intriguing job with the storyline. But like I said, I think though this fills in a lot of the holes in what's been going on, I need to get to how this happened, which I assume is going to happen soon. This seems to be a big storyline. But why is Harry Osborn Kindred? What does that mean? How did he become Kindred? Are all big open questions here, but we're just at the beginning of the storyline right now. Next up, another Tom King book, Strange Adventures number 6 from DC Comics, written by, surprise, Tom King, art by Mitch Gerards and Evan Doc Shaner. In this issue, as usual, we're jumping back and forth between the planet Ron and what's happening on Earth as Mr. Terrific investigates the death of Adam Strange and Alana's daughter. In this issue, Mr. Terrific and Alana kind of go on a date a little bit and parry and check each other out and sort of probe each other's weaknesses, ends in a very different, very interesting place. I like this issue quite a bit, particularly because it made me doubt Alana being the bad guy of this series. How'd you feel about it, Pete?
Yeah, yeah. Also, we had a little Seth Meyers sighting, you know, the little talk show clip here. And as we all know, Seth Meyers came on Comic Book Club, you know, big fan of the show. So, you know, it was nice to see that. But
Nice to see it finally pay off for him.
Yeah, yeah, really nice to see Seth Meyers get his due. You know, poor guy. You know, he works really hard. I mean, this is just, you know, waiting, you know, each Tom King book, you get a little bit more information, a little bit more information. You're trying to piece together this whole story. So it's unbelievable. This person, Tom King, kills it as a writer. I'm excited to see how this unfolds and we get a little bit more. And I love the Terrific stuff in this. I can't wait until the final kind of domino falls. I can kind of look back and see what we've done here.
I agree. This is definitely a mystery book. It's going to make you reevaluate everything when we finally get to the end there. But every issue, just gorgeous to read and gut-wrenching and heartbreaking across the board. Another one, very sad, Marvel Zombies Resurrection number 3 from Marvel, written by Philip Kennedy Johnson, art by Leonard Kirk. Spider-Man has taken Franklin and Valeria to the Galactus Hive to try to find a cure for the zombie virus that has afflicted the Marvel Universe. Things go predictably very, very wrong, including a favorite of Pete's who gets caught in the struggle. I love the twist that Philip gives to the whole Marvel Zombies thing here. It's so smart. So well done. I'm a little hesitant to spoil it, but every issue of this is so dangerous, so harrowing, and it's amazing that he has found a totally different twist on the zombie mythology in the Marvel Universe. How'd you feel, Pete?
Yeah, this was really crazy and intense to kind of like have these kind of reveals of kind of like how this all unfolded. Love the Galactus stuff. The magic stuff is really cool. You know, the character that we're not talking about, I was like, all right. But
we can talk about him. We've spoiled so much this podcast.
This continues to be a really fun book. And if you would have said,
Wolverine!
You would think like, okay, Marvel Zombies, all right, how long are we doing this? But this is really is a fresh take on it, and it's very enjoyable.
I agree. I'm very nervous, concerned about what will happen at the last issue when we get to that.
Yeah.
Moving on to Seven Secrets, number 3 from Boom Studios, written by Tom Taylor, illustrated by Danielle DiNicolo. this issue, we're following who we still think is our main character, but we're not 100% sure, as they go on a mission to become the new secret keeper for this organization. Still don't know what the secrets are. Still don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
We just know somebody evil is gunning straight for them. Another great issue of this book as they, Tom and company, continue to build out the mythology. How'd you feel, Pete?
Yeah, I like this. Again, we kind of don't know. I mean, if I'm risking my life over a briefcase, I might take a peek. But I think that this is very creative in the way that it kind of like tells the story as it unfolds, and the touching like 15 gifts from the father for the 15 years he wasn't there. That got me. That got me a little bit. That was pretty awesome. I've been really impressed with the characters in the book and their story and kind of how this is all moving forward. A lot of great action. Yeah, this continues to impress.
Yeah, great book. And Daniel DeNicolo's art is also real good. It's very anime, manga inspired.
Yeah.
But it feels
and the it mustache feels like a guy,
halfway point.
Reminds me of the guy from Voltron, the new Voltron. So.
Interesting. I don't know what you're talking about, but I appreciate it regardless. Before we wrap up here, let's do it. Let's get into the X/Ten of Swords block. Three issues out this week. Hellions number 5, written by Zeb Wells and art by Carmen Carnero. New Mutants number 13, written by Ed Prison and art by Rob Rice. Cable number 5, written by Jerry Dugan and art by Phil Noto. Versus the last Dukes. Week, where we got a little more of an overarching story. Each one of these is very much its own thing. In Hellions, we get that team heading off into Otherworld to basically cheat the whole sword contest that's going on by stealing Araco's swords. In New Mutants, we find out how Cypher is dealing with the fact that he's supposed to be a sword bearer. Answer is not very well. And in Cable, he is dealing with a sword of his own. When last we left him, he was with Cyclops and Jean Grey on Sword, the actual space station, the people. And we find out what happened to them. And what happens next. This is great. I was a little worried that this crossover was going to be just one thing after another, just following up on it. But I love that each one of these is individual interweaving stories. And I thought each of these issues was a ton of fun all on its own. Pete, I know you liked last week's issues. How'd you feel about this one's?
I did. I really liked the break from the stacking insane idea on top of insane idea. And like here, we're just going to have like a showdown. You bring your best. We'll bring our best. Bring a sword. Let's settle this. But this gets a little derailed by, you know, the Lollipop Guild, where they sit around a table and makes insane decisions like, hey, you know, we're going to do this big battle to the death, but why don't we cheat? Right? Because we're on our own island and we're not playing by any rules, so fuck it. Let's just cheat and just throw a wrench in the whole fucking thing.
So this is in Hellions, by the way, just to clarify what's going on here. I love this issue. Zeb Wells writes the crap out of these characters. His empath is such a horrible asshole in a hilarious way. Mr. Sinister is great.
The cape bit is just glorious. It's really
fun. Oh my God, so funny. Just, it's a funny book, and I appreciate that in the middle of this, like, it's particularly coming off of, I think the last issue was Storm being like, I need to potentially destroy my relationship with my husband because it's the end of the world and I need to invade Wakanda. And then this issue, Mr. Sinister's like wrestling with a horse. Most of the issue is great. Like that you can have these different tones of this world is so much fun.
Yeah, it's all right.
And then, of course, there's New Mutants, which is, I think, one of the greatest issues of all time that really just really digs in on Cypher as a character, one of the greatest characters of all time, gives him his due in the sun, shows up what's going on with Warlock, trains him with Ilyana, plays on his insecurities, but in the right way, and fleshes out his relationship with Krakoa. Just a great issue across the board. And I know I'm using a sarcastic voice, but I also actually think that.
Yeah. The art in this book is glorious. The Krakoa, you know, trying to stop him and talk to him, but like, if something happens to you, I won't be able to. I thought that was great. But at this point, I'm like, okay, guys, a lot of build up to this sword fight. Can we get to this goddamn sword fight? Like, do I got to sit there and see everybody's origin story, how they got their sword?
There's 10 swords. They're all not right. Even halfway through. They'll get halfway through. They'll have all the swords, and then they'll have a bunch of fights.
Yep.
Come on.
Hopefully,
and I can Cable make it also long. Fun with like some terrifying, weird alien enemies. That was super fun as well. Just a fun month across the board. Right, Pete?
Sure, yeah. What a month. What a year. Everybody's having a blast. Yeah. Good times.
Yeah, I just ordered a shirt online, actually, that said 2020, having a blast.
Oh, man. Yeah, I mean, I'll look forward to hopefully this getting to the fight. I don't know. I think the last month with the three titles or last week, whatever it was, I thought was better, getting me hyped for this thing. But after this week, I'm kind of like, all right, get me there already. You know, but, you know, hey, people like reading stuff in between their comic book pages, apparently, because, man, they're doubling the fuck down on that.
Oh my gosh. At this point, I'm just refusing to do it. I like these quite a bit. I had a fun time this week, and I'm glad we read all three of them.
Yeah, did you like reading about the sword instead of seeing it? Just reading about like how much it weighs and that kind of stuff?
You know what they say? Do bring an essay to a sword fight.
Ah, right, right.
If you'd like to support this podcast, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m.
We sure do.
Crowdcast and YouTube. Come hang out and check it out. iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe and listen to the show at Comic Book Live for this pod. You can, I don't know, socially or whatever. Comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the virtual comic book shop.